I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the program, as the eastern United States confronts a severe tropical storm, possibly hurricane, East Africa is still facing drought and famine. We'll get an update on the crisis that has already caused hundreds of thousands of people to flee their homes in the Horn of Africa. NPR's West Africa correspondent is on the scene, and she'll tell us more. But first, it's time for our political chat. You've probably heard by now that the official dedication ceremony of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, which was to have been led by President Obama this Sunday, has been postponed due to concerns about the severe weather. But that change has not ended conversations sparked by the memorial, conversations about the state of political and human rights for all people and about King's struggle to fight poverty. Also in political news this week, what does the downfall of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi's regime say about President Obama's foreign policy? Could this affect the 2012 presidential campaign? We'll also talk about how Texas Governor Rick Perry is transforming the picture for Republican presidential candidates. To talk about all this, we've called upon two seasoned political professionals. Cornell Belcher served as a pollster for President Obama and the Democratic National Committee. He is president of Brilliant Corners Research and Strategies, a national polling firm. He's here with me in Washington, D.C. Welcome. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us once again, Ron Christie. He served as deputy assistant for domestic policy to Vice President Cheney, and also an aide to President George W. Bush. He's president of Christie Strategies, a government relations, communications, and diversity consulting firm. He's also the author of a memoir. Ron, welcome back to you as well. Thank you for joining us once again.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
And of course, we're going to get to the politics, but I did want to ask, and I hope you don't mind my mentioning that you're both very accomplished African-American men working in politics. And I did want to ask if, even though the ceremony's been postponed, whether the dedication of this memorial on the National Mall means something to you. Cornell, I'll ask you first.
Yeah, it means a lot. I was actually looking forward to going. It's long overdue. And I think it's just a reminder, and I think it would be a great reminder to a new generation of younger, not only African-Americans, but Americans, that the struggle continues. I mean, you were going to talk about poverty, but when you look at sort of how the rates of poverty have increased, particularly children living in poverty, it is shameful for our nation. And I think it is the kind of thing that Martin Luther King would be out there leading and organizing around. And I think that sort of transcends to politics, which I know we'll talk about shortly.
Mm-hmm. Ron, what about you?
Totally agree with Cornell, and it's something that maybe a lot of folks don't realize, but the Dr. King Memorial is the only memorial on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. that's not either dedicated to a war that the United States has been involved with or a male, a white male. So we have diversity on the National Mall, diversity for someone whose whole life was dedicated to making sure that we'd be judged by the content of our character and not the color of our skin. I'm bummed that the hurricane is really going to put a damper on the festivities this weekend, but it's a long time overcoming for Dr. King finally to have his place in the National Mall.
You know, though it is sparking conversations, though, about what is the struggle now and what this monument means in the light of whatever the concerns are of the people of the moment. You know, obviously Dr. King's particular struggle and that just the legally entrenched, you know, socially enforced, you know, degradation of a whole group of people is no more. But, you know, we've caught the Princeton scholar Cornell West, who's been, you know, who has emerged as a critic of the president, a very severe and kind of personal critic of the president, wrote a piece saying that the age of Obama has fallen tragically short of fulfilling King's prophetic legacy. Instead of articulating a radical democratic vision, fighting for homeowners, workers, and poor people in the form of mortgage relief and so forth, he says the administration gave us bailouts for banks, record profits for Wall Street, and giant budget cuts on the backs of the vulnerable. So, Cornell, how do you respond to that?
Well, in a couple of ways. I think that's really unfair to sort of to argue that Barack Obama has given us bailouts and record profits for Wall Street. If you look at the situation that he inherited coming in, look, we didn't tear down the peace and prosperity that we had in the 90s overnight, and we won't build it back overnight. However, if you look at sort of what he's been doing and laying in place and Wall Street reform, actually taking on Wall Street against the bankers, I think it's kind of hard to argue that he is you know the reason why Wall Street is profiting the way it's profiting right now. He is in a slugfest right now with a Congress that wants to go in a dramatically different sort of direction. He's in a slugfest culturally with a group of people in the Tea Party that culturally want to take the country in a different direction or want to stop the direction that the country is going in.
Ron, I'm going to ask you this because even though obviously you come from a very different worldview than Cornell West or either Cornell Belcher for that matter, you are a conservative, but you But what are you – I'm interested in your response to Cornel West's point that poor people have gotten lost in our political dialogue right now. And I would argue that conservatives have just as much responsibility to address the needs of the poor as anybody else does. So what would you – what do you think about that?
There's no question. I mean, when you look at the fact that 1 in 5 men in America are receiving some sort of government assistance, when you look at the unemployment rate of being 9.1%, when you look that we have more people on Medicaid and that more people are taking food stamps than ever in American history, clearly there are millions of people around this country who are hurting, and it's not a Republican or Democratic issue. We need to ensure that the safety net is there for those who need assistance. But at the same time, we also need to make sure that we don't put government policies in place that perpetuate unemployment. For example, the 99 weeks that we have for people who are unemployed, studies have shown that people who are these so-called 99ers often end up getting a job with 1 or 2 weeks left in their government assistance. So we have to provide a safety net, but at the same time, I don't think that we should have policies that perpetuate a system where people continue to take money from the government.
Let me jump in, and one thing I would push back on there is this ideal that people are gaming the system. I think there's so many people out there hurting that force ideals sort of we're making policy so that people won't for that fraction of people who in fact might be gaming the system. When you look at the sort of the unemployment in this country right now, I think is a cynical view. But, you know, not even being partisan, I mean, I would push it even further to say when have poor people ever been a center part of this political discussion in this country? Arguably not since LBJ, and, you know, have we had a real serious at the top level conversation about eradicating poverty in this country? And part of it is, and this is, I'm sorry, but I'm an animal of Washington. Unless you are organized and you can bring votes and power and money, it is hard to have a voice in Washington.
Ryan, could you mind if I ask you just briefly, forgive me if I'm putting you on the spot, do you personally know anybody who's unemployed, and do you think they're gaming the system?
I do know people who are unemployed, and I do have some suspicions about people who are taking money that they shouldn't be taking from the government. Absolutely.
Okay. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're having our weekly political chat. With me are Democratic pollster Cornel Belcher and Republican political consultant Ron Christie. We're only down to 4 minutes, and there's such an important – there's two big stories that we want to talk about. We want to talk about Libya, and we also want to talk about how Rick Perry has changed the presidential race. And so I don't know what to do with that.
I want to talk about poverty more.
Okay. You want to talk about poverty more. So why don't we talk about Rick Perry briefly, Ron, and then if we have time, we'll talk about Libya. So Ron, tell me why Rick Perry has sort of surged to the front of the pack, it seems.
Well, there's no doubt that I'm a partisan for Governor Mitt Romney, but I think that what Governor Perry has done is he's really shaken up the landscape of the political establishment for Republicans. He's conservative. He has a conservative record. And I think that there's been a dearth out there on the landscape for the social conservatives, for those who they wanted to put their hat behind.
But you'd think that this would be Mitt Romney's moment precisely because the economy is in difficult shape. And he's got this very long track record as a business executive and so forth. You'd think that that would be his calling card. But it doesn't seem to be working. Why is that?
Well, I think it's still Romney's to lose. I think Governor Perry might be the flavor of the week. He surged in the polls. People think, oh, bright, shiny object. But when you take a harder look at his record and you take a look at, frankly, what his vision is for the country, I still think that it's going to be Governor Romney's to lose.
Yeah. Cornel?
I don't actually have a horse in that race. Ha ha. However, you know, not having my partisan hat on, just having my political strategist hat on, being someone who went through this process in primaries, you know, I don't want to see the get too much from Perry's surge in the national polls, because after all, it's not a national election; it is a state by state election, and you know, the candidate who organizes and builds in these early states and gets that momentum is going to go far. So I always laugh at when I see national polls about sort of where a candidate is, because I think more telling is where a candidate is right now in New Hampshire and Iowa and South Carolina. But clearly Perry does speak to something, and I thought Michelle Bachmann spoke to it as well. If you look at the power and the influence that the Tea Party had on the primaries and caucuses and the midterms where they took out incumbents, you cannot ignore them.
And finally, we can't ignore Libya. Thank you for that segue. Cornel, tell us how you think that what's happening in Libya now is affecting our conversation is our view about President Obama? Or is it just not present enough for Americans for people to really focus on this as something that they that concerns their lives?
I kind of laugh at it because frankly, we'll make a big hay of what's going on in Libya. And I'm going to put my company head on and say, look, what the president's done in Libya is succeeding. And we're not without troops on the ground, without us spending a ton of money there. However, in the end, Americans aren't going to be focused on what's going on in the Middle East. They're going to be focused on what's going on in Main Street. And that's what's going to determine our election.
Ron Christie, how do you assess the administration's performance in Libya? There are some who are arguing, so Democratic columnist, it has to be said, who's saying it doesn't, you know, Obama could succeed brilliantly and everybody could win Powerball and people still wouldn't give him credit.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I don't know how you define success here. I think the president first committed our men and women in uniform to aircraft sorties, and then he said, oh, we're going to let NATO take the lead in this. We don't need to go to Congress under the War Powers Resolution since we're not at war. But yet now the administration's saying, oh, look at the credit that we should take for the great success that we have. So I don't know what success will look like. I don't know what is going to be on the ground in Libya in the next couple of weeks, let alone next couple of months, whether it'll be stable or whether it'll be analogous to a civil war. But this is where I think I agree with Cornell. I think Americans are more concerned about what's going on in Tripoli, Iowa, than they are in Tripoli, Libya. And I think what's going on here domestically with our economy and jobs is going to really be the centerpiece of whether the president gets reelected or not.
All right. Well, stay dry. Gentlemen, thank
you. Right back at you.
Thank you. Ron Christie is president of Christie Strategies, a government relations, communications, and diversity consulting firm. He was kind enough to join us once again from our bureau in New York. Here with me in Washington, D.C., Cornell Belcher, president of Brilliant Corners Research and Strategies, a polling firm. Gentlemen, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, he's a music legend, the godfather of go-go, the one and only Chuck Brown. He's celebrating a big birthday this week, the Big 7-5.
Since I've been out here, I've learned so much, through experience, things that nobody ever told me.
Chuck Brown tells us about keeping the beat and his upcoming tribute concert with, get this, the National Symphony Orchestra. That's coming up on Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.